This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are live here, both on Instagram and on Pet Life Radio. Here for the next 30 minutes with Dr. Jeff Werber, your host, here on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vet with Dr. Jeff, here for you, here for your pets. And just anything you want to talk about, we are here and ready to talk. So I'm just, hello, hey, Danielle, how are you? I'm waving. So as you know, anything you want to talk about, I have some things. Hello, Steph. And if you can hear my voice, maybe a little bit groggy, a little froggy. You know, I never get sick. And whatever was going around, I think I got it. And it's been like about a week almost. First, I thought it was just basic laryngitis. And no, it's been lingering on. I feel totally fine. Never had a fever. Never stopped working, eating. Everything's normal except the chest. So anyway, but I'm doing fine. Doing much, much better. Hope all of you are well. It is a gorgeous day here in SoCal. And, let's see. Hearing new vaccines will be mRNA. Can you comment? If you could talk about the, yes. A couple of things I wanted to talk about. One is I saw something, a post on one of the news sites that I get, that beware of scammers. So a lot of times if you find a pet, what do? You post you found a pet. So then you're getting calls from either supposedly a shelter or vet clinic saying, oh, we know that pet and he needs to be on medication. If you can send us some money, we can get to the medication until you can find the owner. We'll help you find the owner. It's BS. Don't fall for it. They'll give you a Venmo. They can pay by. You can pay by Venmo. Don't do it. They're scammers. They are combing these sites. And anytime they see, you know, look, who posts about a pet like this, right? It's usually going to be a pet lover who really cares. If you lost a pet, you post a pet, then you're going to get a result that we have your pet and it's sick. Or some, we found a pet and it's sick. We know who it belongs to, but it needs some medication. So either way, don't fall for it. If someone says, we have your pet, then let me see the pet and send me pictures. Let's do a video. Let me see your clinic. Let me see the pet there. And I'll tell you if it's my pet. Don't just say, oh, we got the ID tag. It sounds like it's yours. Don't fall for it. How was everybody's week? I hope it was a good week. Mine was busy as always, which is good. And so the other thing I wanted to talk about, and we could start the, how to treat diarrhea in a nursing cat. Well, first of all, diarrhea can happen for many reasons, and one of them is stress. So, you know, nursing cats usually are eating more. They should be anyway. A pregnant animal usually should eat about 1.5 times their normal. A nursing mom should eat twice as much, like literally double the caloric load. So that in of itself, she's eating more, that could also cause diarrhea. But just the stress, having the kittens, that can also cause the diarrhea. So I wouldn't want to use drugs at this point because you don't want to get that stuff into the kittens. But just add a little fiber to the diet is pretty much all you need to do. A little cilia powder, a little cooked oatmeal, a little bran. Just add a little bit of fiber. It will improve as the stress level comes down or even just the excitement of having kittens. But I'd be really careful. You don't want to use any kind of medication because, of course, that's going to get into the milk and that's not a good thing. Okay, so what I wanted to mention is that having done my telemedicine for a number of years now and really seeing a lot of cases, back in the day, if you even, it's as interesting, if you ask an emergency room vet who works in the emergency clinic, what percent of emergencies are actually emergencies? Even they would tell you, which I found fascinating, about 20%. And that's coming from an emergency room doc. So 20% of the cases they see as an emergency are actually an emergency. Now, having done telemedicine through AirVet for a long time, it's not just ours. I talked to other telemedicine doctors, and basically we're getting the same thing. I've done probably close to 4,000 telemedicine visits, and some of them obviously were not meant to be an emergency, but I would say of the ones that where someone contacted us for an emergency, I'd say that number is actually more like 5%. That means most of these emergencies aren't. And unfortunately, what happens is, as any of you know, and I'd love to hear that when you've had a case And of course, your veterinarian at 2 a.m. wasn't available, or on a Sunday or whatever. So they have an emergency. You have a message, automatic message at the office. Say, hi, thanks for calling, but we're closed. If you have an emergency, we recommend you either call or go to this clinic or call this clinic. So what are most normal people going to do? They are going, of course, to go. So they're going to go to the emergency room. Now, emergency rooms, you know, I got to tell you, can you talk about distemper? Fostering a dog who had kennel cough and vomiting, now aspirate. Oh my God. Vet said he's checking for distemper. He says nasal discharge. What's the like of it? Well, I mean, look, distemper is a fairly common problem that we're going to see, especially in shelter animals. Or, you know, any times that our animals are coming from a rescue or foster, often, you know, fosters, you know what fosters do? They do wonderful work. They often go to these shelters, they look at these dogs, and they say to themselves, look, we know many of these dogs can be put to sleep. Who can we save? How many can we save? And which ones are the most likely to be saved or be able to be adopted once we get to pull them? So sometimes, you know, dogs with kennel cough, it's very common. You see them all the time. So what we need to do is, what they'll often do is they will find dogs that seem to be the most adoptable, and that's who they pull. Now, could a dog with a simple kennel cough end up with a much more aggressive respiratory infection? Or maybe it then vomits, and then maybe it aspirates? So yes, these are possibilities. Does it mean it's distemper? Not necessarily, but it's to be tested for distemper. And there are some tests that can be done. But meanwhile, treatment is the key. Now, distemper is very interesting because distemper is an epitheliotrophic disease. That means it attacks all epithelial surfaces. So what are some of the symptoms? Well, the eyes, our corneas, our epithelial tissue, the respiratory tract, okay? The respiratory tract is covered, lined with epithelium. How about the intestinal tract? Oh my God, lined with epithelium. So you have these multi-systemic diseases all because of one virus that attacks epithelial tissue. So that's the problem. Now, what else is lined with epithelium? The brain, neural tissue. So there are different phases of distemper virus. The most common, the one that usually comes first, is the respiratory. Then it can go to the GI, gastrointestinal, and ultimately the brain. Now, it's a tough one. It is treatable. There are some things we can do, but remember, it's a virus. So all we can do is support the body as best we can to let the body then take care of its own virus. So now, usually my feeling is if it's just respiratory, 100%, treat as you would any respiratory infection and keep them warm, keep them well fed, keep the body as strong as possible. If you go to the GI tract, same thing. My feeling is, and just my hit from historically, if it hits the brain, the neuro tract, then it's going to be a more of a challenge. Even dogs that recover, and there are many that can, they may get something called ODE, old dog encephalitis. Down the road, could be a year, could be several years, they could start getting like disorders, neurologic disorders, which is probably related to that distemper virus they had. Also, if you look at dogs' teeth, one way you can really tell if the dog was subjected or was exposed to distemper as a little puppy is they will have a problem with their enamel hypoplasia, and their teeth will come in, their adult teeth, but the adult teeth have a lot of like cracked enamel. They'll have divots. It'll be browner. The teeth don't look pretty. Now, the dentin, the next layer, deeper layer, which is the strength layer, that's going to be fine. But just the teeth are not pretty. Now, would I recommend not taking a dog that is doing fine and has distemper teeth? Absolutely no. Go for it. It's aesthetics. They beat it. And this is just, it's a sign that says, yes, when I was a puppy, I was subjected to distemper virus, but I'm good now. Don't let that stop you. But anyway, so at this point with aspiration pneumonia, I'm concerned. I would 100% treat. I would not put this dog to sleep. All right. I would definitely want to treat it and see what's going on. But that is my recommendation. All right. So I would not treat. All right. Definitely treat. Just know that because of the possibility of it being a more aggressive disease, and because the aspiration pneumonia sometimes it wouldn't be the distemper pneumonia that would worry me as much as the aspiration pneumonia. So how's the dog doing? All right. We have to know that. So estimate for $4,000 would be, say, okay, I got an estimate for $4,000. Well, oh yeah, you know, this is what I'm getting at with these emergencies or not emergencies. And, you know, first of all, a lot of these corporate practices, I don't know what to tell you. I try to make this nice. I can't make it nice. They are business. They are funded by venture capital groups, by equity, private equity. They really, I can't say they don't care about the animal. What they care about is making money. And because they make big investments in these practices. And anyone who has gone to one of these corporate practices, who also goes or has gone to a non-corporate practice, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Can I sugarcoat this? I cannot sugarcoat it. It is what it is. I look at some of these invoices coming in and I'm saying to myself, why do they do that? They didn't need to do that test. That's not going to take care of this problem. So what's happening is back in the day, emergency clinics basically were triage. They said, this is what we need to do to get you through the night so you can go back to your regular veterinarian in the morning. It's not like that anymore. These are clinics that literally will take over a case, often managed at night by younger and experienced veterinarians, and they are so afraid to miss something because they don't know, they don't have the wisdom. Wisdom comes from experience. So they want to test for everything that they could possibly test for to rule things out. And before you know it, you spend thousands of dollars. And because they do every test in the book, and here's a case I'm seeing here from cat snippers. And guess what? The cat was fine within a few days. It is frustrating to me. It's frustrating to my clients. And that was my point about the number of emergencies that are truly emergencies is much less. And if there was any way you can log on, find out of any kind of telemedicine platform, you know, they use it in human medicine all the time. And now, interestingly, in many states, including California, you can establish what's called a VCPR, veterinary client patient relationship, online through a virtual visit. And then that doctor, if they're licensed in that state, can actually prescribe medications directly without seeing the patient. Now, when I mean seeing it, you are seeing it video. Now, are you touching it? No. But any experienced doctor could tell a lot by a thorough history and a visual and asking the owner on the virtual visit, lift up the lips. I want to see what the gums look like. How's the activity? Does the cat or dog look fine? Is it acting fine? Did it eat? Did it not eat? Is it vomiting? Did it not vomit? You can get a lot. And sometimes just by knowing how that pet is doing, literally how animated, how active, that speaks volumes. Now, is it going to solve a problem necessarily? Not necessarily, but might it get you through the night where you could see a regular vet the next day, probably a vet that you're much more comfortable seeing than some strange young veterinarian? So this is where I have my issues. And I get this all the time. And I'm getting so many frustrated clients from these places. And I feel your frustration. Because when I look at what they did and what tests they ran and why they did it, and what that wasn't part of the emergency. Might it be down the road a test that needs to be done? Yes, it might be. But did it have to be done last night? No. No. There's so many other things you could have done first to stabilize the animal. And this is the concern I have. Okay, get me off that soapbox. All right, now, two-year-old eating, I have him on Clavamox, Baytril, and Serenia. I hope it's not distemper. It sounds awful. No. So look, if he's eating and he's already two and he's on two really good broad-spectrum antibiotics, I love them both, all right? And Serenia vomiting, then just keep him strong. The fact that he's eating is a good sign. If he's going to the bathroom, I don't know what his level of animation is. Is he active? Is he alert? If he's acting fine, that's a really good sign. And just keep doing what you're doing. You're covering your bases as far as any infection, bacterial infection, of course. You have a Serenia, which is controlling the vomiting. So at this point, keep him well fed, well hydrated. Hydration is key. And kidney posted. Barrel intestinal diagnosis because they can't. Wow, that's the problem. And look, I get it. It's nuts. But I'll tell you this. We were taught differently. I can't even explain it. When we were in school, we didn't have all these fancy things at our disposal. So we were taught to do a thorough physical and a thorough history. You make your diagnosis, or at least your rule outs, based on those two things, history and a thorough physical. Then, when you have thought all the things out, looked at all the other possibilities, you can rule out a lot of the differentials just based on every one of these diseases have multiple, right, symptoms. So all of a sudden, you're thinking of one of the diseases you put on the list, but the only symptom that this particular disease had was, I say, the vomiting. I wouldn't say it's some weird disease yet, because those dogs that have that disease are also not eating. They're also this. The stool is yet this color. We're not having any of that. So I'm not saying you cross it off your list. That's not tonight. You don't have to worry about that now. And then once you do that, when you do a test, you're not testing to determine your differentials. You're testing to confirm what you already have hunches about. And that's when you do a test. They're trying to come up with their diagnosing only through testing. You should already have a pretty good idea of a good diagnostician of what the diagnoses are, could be, and that's where the test comes in, to confirm it or knock it off your list. But you don't test for everything right away, because I use this expression a lot, and I know you've heard it, but I'm apologizing. I'm going to share it again. And that is, if you're running along the beach in Malibu, California, and you hear hoofbeats chasing you from behind, what are you thinking, horses or zebras? You're not thinking of a zebra, but that young doctor, that test you just ran, you're looking for a disease that you're going to see maybe twice in your entire career. Why are you testing for it now? But again, trust me, veterinarians, we are dealing with this all the time. It's disheartening for us. It really is. And whose fault is it? I don't know whose fault it is. Is it corporate America who are buying up all these practices? I think the latest statistic was like 40% of small animal practices are corporate owned. I hope I'm wrong, but I know it's getting up there. And so it's a lot more difficult to find those smaller practices that are still privately run, that the practice philosophy, the first thing on that list is the pet care. And then the other things follow. And of course, I've owned practice. I have practice for many, many years. I know what it's like. You have to pay everybody. You have to pay your suppliers. You want to make a nice profit, but at what expense? I mean, you can't have clients pay for all of that. And what do these doctors want to do? They want to have their work-life balance. So they want to work a little less. Ah, but they want to make the same amount of money. Oh, so how does that work? If you want to work less, but make the same amount of money, there's only one way to do that, right? What is that? Either increase your fees, which is probably what they're doing, or decrease the actual quality of care by not having some of the best medications and the best equipment. So they buy cheaper stuff, and that way they're making more money. Is that the answer? I don't think so. It wasn't for me. But this is the reality. And that's why there is so much stuff out there that really is ragging on veterinary medicine. And it is still, in my opinion, it's the best profession on the planet. Well, I wouldn't do anything differently. I honestly feel it sounds corny. I was put on this earth to do what I'm doing. And that's what makes it so much fun. So let's go back to the, you know, what is an emergency? How do you know? And a lot of times you're not going to know. So you should ask your veterinarian, are there online sources that you could trust? Not Google, Dr. Google, because for Dr. Google, everything's an emergency. Their answer for everything. Oh, my dog broke his toenail. He's bleeding. Oh my God. Go to the emergency. No, there are a lot of things that you can do. If you are able to talk to somebody virtually on camera who can see you, see the pet, see what it looks like, and walk you through some very simple solutions to get you to tomorrow. And then tomorrow you get to see a regular veterinarian. And also, I've had some stories recently, one that concerned me a lot. And I think that veterinarians, many of them, because of the changes in the dynamic of the veterinary practice, are, I guess, maybe a little bit overworked, or they're not scheduling the same. I don't know the answer. I really don't. But one of my clients, it's a new client for me, and now it's going to be a permanent client. She'd been going to a doctor. And in fact, about a month earlier, she spent about $3,000. She wasn't complaining about it. It was apparently the dog was pretty sick, and $3,000 bill, and she paid it no problem. A month later, she calls, her dog's at the dog park, and gets bitten by another dog. So what does she do? Of course, she calls her vet. Says, my dog was just attacked in the park. He's bleeding. He's got a big gash. And I need to come in. Receptionist puts her on hold and comes back and says, well, we could see you next Wednesday. Next Wednesday? I just said my dog is bitten and bleeding. Well, I'm sorry. I might be able to squeeze you in on Monday. Is that not crazy? That, to me, I was shocked. She calls me. I just, she didn't know me. She got my name for somebody. Called, told me it was going. I said, no, come on in. We'll get you in. We'll squeeze you in somewhere. I have technicians that can dress a wound and look at it. It just doesn't make sense to me. Where are these veterinarians being taught what is ruling, right, the priorities at a pet hospital? And some people say, well, they don't like taking emergencies because the people that are waiting. And I say, yeah, but wait a second. If it was an emergency, that's what we're here for. The people that were waiting and see an emergency come in, see this dog be carried in, struggling to breathe or bleeding out, whatever, right? What does it show them? That I have the correct priority and that they know that who was ever them bringing in their animal in an emergency, I would drop everything to see their animal. And I think most pet parents appreciate the fact that they see that if something needs to be seen that's more important than them and their case or their time. And I always offer to someone who's really pressed on time, and I get it. Most of my clients are working people. I said, tell you what, Mrs. Smith, Lee Bowser here with us. I don't charge for the day. And you go to work and we'll take care of things and you can pick up after work. I mean, you make it happen. And if it was not an emergency, and I have a lot of very, very, very fair clients. And if it wasn't, they were coming in for something more routine, I'll say, no problem, I'll reschedule. And they reschedule. So these are the things that when it's an emergency, it was really good to know that it's an emergency. And if you can talk to somebody, that might, well, first of all, it's going to save you a bundle. Because once you take that animal, regardless of what the cause is, to an emergency clinic, they will treat it as an emergency. And then I'll give you another one, that this is another reason why, if it's really not an emergency, don't go in. And I'll tell you why. Because I had another case where this client did have an emergency. She took it in. The dog had 105.1 fever, could barely breathe, and sat in that emergency waiting room for 3 hours before they even got to her. And other cases that were like, dog was sitting there with a little cup, were being taken before. Because the old science of triage, and I've taken my kids to an emergency room before, and someone comes in with a greater emergency, even though I've been waiting there for an hour, they go first. And guess what? They should go first. When it comes to emergency, the amount of time you're waiting, that shouldn't play into it. Unless you have two cases that are about the same level of emergency, then yes, the one that's been there longer should go first. But if somebody comes in that is dire, of course they have to go right in. So these are the things that are affecting the care of your pet. So if you have a pet that is really not that terrible, but you're going to take it from these places and they're going to treat them, your pet that didn't have such a bad thing in the first place, before another animal that needs to be seen like right away. So, I mean, does that upset you a little bit? You had time, you could have waited. That animal's bleeding out. That animal can't breathe. So, P.S., that dog I just told you about, it died. Now, could I say for sure that had they gotten to it right away, that it would have lived? No, I can't. But I can tell you, it probably would have had a better chance. So, anyway, I hate to end on such a bad note, but these are things that I'm hoping that'll help you a little bit. Look for some sort of telemedicine, something that would get you through, even if it saves half of you. Forget the 95-5, even if 50-50, half of you that would not have to go to emergency and could wait to see your doc, and all it took was a little bit of a phone call with the veterinarian, then that was worth it. It was worth every penny. All right, so I am not going to be online for the next 2 weeks. So next Sunday and the Sunday after that, I'll be back after that for sure. So, by the way, those of you who celebrate, happy Passover coming up Saturday night. And I will be back, as I said, in 3 weeks. I'm missing the next Sunday and the following Sunday, and then back online as usual the following. So you will get the alert. So stay tuned. Now, of course, I'm going to be in the office all week. And if you need to get a hold of me, you can get a hold of me here on Instagram Live. You can get a hold of me here on Pet Life Radio, and I'd be happy to help you. But I would, as I said, I'm sorry I'll be missing you. I can't remember having missed 2 weeks in a row in a long, long time. So I feel terribly, but it is what it is. So we'll see you in 3 weeks. But, you know, I'm always available during the week, so reach out to me if you can or if you need to. And we'll see you in 3 weeks.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.